If you're as big a fan of whales as I am, you won't want to miss one of our country's most renowned experts, Dr. Joy Reidenberg, when she talks about the wild and wacky world of whales on Wednesday, May 4th. Dr. Joy Reidenberg, thanks for joining the show.
Happy to be here.
Joy, it is amazing to talk with you because I've seen you on some amazing PBS shows where you are literally inside a whale.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
I know from reading your resume, you in fact are a full professor at Mount Sinai Medical School and lead a very big scientific career, but I'll tell you what, you really bring that science to the general public. It's terrific.
Thank you. Technically, our school is called the Icon School of Medicine at Mount Sinai.
Okay.
And we're in New York City. And although I'm a professor that teaches human anatomy, my research is really in comparative anatomy. So I like looking at all different kinds of animals and how they're adapted to environmental extremes. And, of course, one of the questions I always get asked is, why are you looking at all these weird animals when you're supposed to be focusing on humans? You're at a medical center, after all.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is that I'm looking to nature for inspiration. I'm looking for animals that are adapted to very unusual environments, and I want to understand their solutions because some of those environments mimic human diseases, and some of those environments are places that we often want to live and work, like, let's say, for example, deep sea research or outer space research or high altitude work and so on. And so if we could figure out how these animals solve those problems, we can mimic those solutions and apply it back to the human situation. So that's really the background that I come into.
Sure.
But, of course, teaching the public is something that just comes naturally to me because that's what I do anyway as a professor here. And I think it's every scientist's responsibility to reach out to the public to teach them science because, after all, what is it the scientists do when you think about it? We don't make a thing that we can sell. We don't provide a service that you could buy. We make knowledge, and we're supposed to give it away for free. But most of us are not very good at doing that. And so this is my chance to try to correct that, because most scientists, when they give away their knowledge, they do so in some sort of obscurely written scientific journal with highly technical writing that the lay public will never understand. And that's really not giving it back to the public. And the public deserves to understand science because, after all, they're the ones that are mostly funding it because much of the research comes from public money through government grants. So this is my chance to teach the public back by getting onto a forum such as, you know, a PBS show and other, you know, media that are accessible to the general public.
Well, you know what I've thought of when I've seen your show is not only is it motivational, inspirational, I think of, you know, a young person coming up, as both you and I did, where we said, gosh, I might want to study biology. So there's the inspirational side. But also, even though I'm an old guy and have been at it a long time, I always been thinking, you know, nature's been solving problems a long time. So there is a lot to be learned if you look closely enough.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with you. And I don't know whether you think of yourself as old or not, but you really, you're not old if you're still out there and active. That's how I see it. And this kind of work, I hope it's inspirational to people. In fact, I don't even call it work most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I call it play because I enjoy it so much. And I hope that young people today look for careers. It doesn't have to be in science, but they look for careers where they feel like they're playing all the time. Because let's face it, your job is what you're going to do most of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to be stuck in the work world most of your daytime, it better be something fun because you only get to live once.
That's right. Well, you know, most recently the show I saw that you were part of is Big Blue Live that was in Monterey Bay. Tell a bit about that because that was just amazing.
Big Blue Live was really a fun show to do because it involved live animals. And unlike most of the television work I've done before, this was actually live airing. So there's no retakes. What you do is what you get. Kind of, you know, like talking on radio.
There you go.
You know, you don't always get a chance to retake it again. Once it's out, it's out. So, of course, you have to be careful with what you say and how you say it. Not that we're planning on swearing on the air, but it gets really exciting sometimes when you see something live and all of a sudden right in front of you is a tail of a giant whale. You know, some exclamations can certainly come out of your mouth.
Absolutely. And yet, what a terrific show. There were terrific hosts and co-hosts and other scientists, but you certainly did a great job on it. And I think that whole project came out of Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Yes, they were really the hosts for the broadcast. So we broadcast from the aquarium. They were very big players in the put-together of the whole show. And it was actually a merger of two broadcast groups, PBS and BBC One. So PBS, as you know, for the U.S., is what you might call the highbrow intellectual television station. And their science shows tend to really aimed more, not so much to the lay audience, but to the highly educated mm-hmm. of the lay audience. Whereas the BBC partner isn't the BBC we normally think of that does all the highbrow nature shows that we sometimes see. They're a lot more like perhaps, you know, Animal Planet or Discovery, and catering more to the lay public that isn't necessarily highly educated. And it's more about entertainment than it is about teaching a lesson. And so I think they wanted to partner with each other, and I'm only guessing on this, because PBS wanted to reach out to more than just the highbrow crowd, and I think the BBC channel wanted to reach more than just the entertainment group. And so it was a nice merger of two different groups and two different styles coming together. And I loved working with them. It was a lot of fun. It was a very different kind of broadcast for me, because we were basically calling the shots as we see it with live animals. But my part in particular was not so much focused on the live animals, so it was a little more comfortable for me because I was really the sort of go-to expert to explain stuff, you know, mm-hmm. how the anatomy works and so on.
Probably many listeners know you best from shows like Inside Nature's Giants, but you've certainly done other shows too with PBS and others. I assume the response you've gotten is really, really a positive one.
I don't think too many people like to complain to me, so so I haven't gotten any negative complaints. I'm sure they're out there somewhere, but most people really seem to appreciate that scientists take the time to explain the stuff and break it down to a language that the lay audience can understand. And that's really what I'm all about when it comes to the public broadcast, is to try and get that science into the hands of the lay public. And so I assume people don't know anything about it. I start from scratch when I do my explanations. I don't assume that they've already dissected an animal and have a basic knowledge of anatomy, for example, mm-hmm. when I talk about, you know, the bones or the muscles or the ligaments and so on. And I think people appreciate that I don't try to talk down to them, but try to talk with them and work with them through examples that, you know, relate to analogies of things that they can understand, so that it suddenly becomes very understandable to watch a show like Inside Nature's Giants. Because when you think about it, a show like that can be a real turnoff to people because it's cutting open animals and it's gory in a sense. You know, it's looking at the insides of the guts and the blood and all that stuff. But on the other hand, you know, when you watch a claw from a lion pop out, and you think of analogies like, oh, it's like a switchblade. Mm-hmm. Well, then suddenly it's not gory anymore. Now it's exciting. It's like, how does it do that? You know? And so that's what we try to do, is try to turn it away from the gore and into the really interesting science parts of what we're looking at.
What's great about it, honestly, is your sort of passion for it is contagious. So I think you do first, you first get them with, like, you aren't even going to believe this, what this lady's willing to do. But then beyond that, really delving in more deeply, as you said, really a celebration of the way that life has evolved on Earth, because whether it's a mosquito all the way to a whale, I mean, animals have pretty crazy adaptations.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we've come to the point in our culture where we start to delight in differences, not only among people, but among everything in the world. It used to be everything had to be the same in order for you to like it. And now it's everything should be different, and let's appreciate that diversity. And nowhere is that more apparent than looking at nature and seeing the diverse adaptations that are out there, so that each animal has its own niche in the world. And I love looking at that, and I love sharing that with people. And I hope people do get excited by all of these special things that each animal can do. And that's why I don't only reach out by television. I do a lot of talks at elementary schools and middle schools and high schools and colleges. Scientists should get out of their ivory tower and get down on the ground and show people what they're doing. People would embrace it more. People would fund it more. Scientists can be fallible, but we're humans like they are, and we're doing the best we can to try and find answers to questions.
Because that's what scientists do, is ask questions all day long.
Absolutely. That's why I went into it. I like the freedom of being able to ask any question in the world and being able to design the experiment to answer it. What could be more creative than that? I even turned away from a career in the arts because of that. I was actually thinking of doing medical illustration or other mm-hmm. types of illustration, because I'm also an artist. But I found that was more limiting than being a scientist. And one of the reasons I lean towards anatomy is it is so visual. Of all the sciences, this is probably the most visual one. And so, of course, most of my notes are in pictures, which which works for me.
Absolutely.
I guess I never got out of kindergarten. I like books with lots of pictures in them.
Well, and it works in your lectures as well, I'm sure. Well, Dr. Joy Rydenburg, you are aptly named. You've been a joy to talk to about this. I encourage
Thank
any
you.
Listeners to try to catch any of the shows you've been part of and other productions you've done. So Thanks very much for spending some time with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
My guest has been Dr. Joy Reidenberg, professor at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York City.